morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, KUNM News Director Megan Kamrick. New Mexico was already seeing an influx of people seeking abortion services here as more states passed restrictions on abortion when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June. Now that tide is growing as more states put even more restrictions and bans in place. This comes at a time when our healthcare system is already stretched thin by the pandemic. Meanwhile, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed an executive order to ensure safe harbor for people seeking abortions or providing abortions at healthcare facilities within the state. It prohibits cooperation with other states that might interfere with abortion access here. Lujan Grisham is one of a number of Democratic governors in states where abortion remains legal taking such steps. Also, two providers have announced plans to relocate to New Mexico. Texas-based Whole Woman's Health is looking to move to a city along the Texas state line, and the clinic at the center of the Supreme Court case, Jackson Women's Health, is moving operations to Las Cruces. Another California firm is expanding its telehealth options here. This morning on Let's Talk New Mexico, we're looking at what may happen next as the state becomes a focus of abortion services, and we want to hear from you. What questions or concerns do you have about New Mexico becoming one of the centers for abortion services? Are you glad that these services will remain legal here and serve others? Are you worried about the impact on our healthcare infrastructure and what attention this might bring from abortion opponents? Email us at letstalk@kunm.org, tweet to us with the hashtag letstalknm, or call us at 505-277-5866. And my first guest today is Dr. Amber Trueheart. She is the clinical director for the University of New Mexico Center for Reproductive Health. Good morning, Dr. Trueheart.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I know you're very busy and cannot be with us for long, but please give us a sense of how the overturning of Roe v. Wade is impacting your clinic. Are you getting more calls now?
Yeah, I mean, I think even on the Friday that Roe v. Wade was overturned, in that one day, we booked out an entire week of July as far as services. Because I think a lot of clinics, because of trigger laws, even that exact day, you know, could no longer provide abortions. And so lots of women were then seeking care in other places.
And your clinic is one of three in the state providing what we call procedural abortions. All of them are in Albuquerque. That means an actual medical procedure versus medication abortions. Why do people seek those rather than going the route of using medication?
Sometimes it's just a personal preference as far as like what they want the experience of the abortion to be like. Lots of women who are traveling out of state want the procedure because it's done that day, right? There's no follow-up. There's no, you know, they get everything done and they're leaving, you know, the clinic not pregnant. And then sometimes it's just the fact of gestational age because the medication abortion is only offered up to a certain point. And then after that, their only choice is procedures.
And is there a limit to how far along you are in a pregnancy when you can use medication versus having a medical procedure?
Yeah, currently it's offered, the medication procedure is offered up to 11 weeks, and then after 11 weeks we just do procedures.
And I understand from a recent article in the Texas Tribune that your clinic actually did a relatively low number of abortions until last September when Texas banned abortion at around 6 weeks into pregnancy. And now about 75% of your patients are from Texas. Are they coming from other places too?
Yeah, it's hard for me to comment. I came in August, so I moved from Chicago to New Mexico in August of 2021, and so I've only ever known kind of what our clinical volume has been like since Texas closed to abortions after 6 weeks. But I do know from what other people have said is that usually we have predominantly seen New Mexicans or women from Arizona, and then the big shift was that most of our patients are now from Texas. I would say then Oklahoma closed a couple of months ago, and so we've seen many more women from Oklahoma, Kansas, Arizona, and then some women from even places like Louisiana who were previously getting their care in Texas or Oklahoma are now looking further away.
What is the typical wait right now for someone calling you today saying, I need to come in?
Yeah, when I got here in August, the wait was that same week. You know, so we did get people in within 7 days, and now it's closer to about 3 weeks.
And if you have to delay services because of demand, what does that mean for people seeking abortion services?
Yeah, so sometimes, like we said, it means that they're no longer a candidate for a medication abortion. If they called it 9 weeks and then that 3 week wait makes them 12 weeks, they have less choices about how they can, you know, have an abortion, or it can become an even like a longer procedure. They need more cervical prep, so they're going to be in clinic all day versus just a couple of hours. For some women, it means they're now a 2 day procedure, so they need to travel to New Mexico and be here for 2 days, you know, for cervical prep the first day and the procedure the next day.
So it's more complicated the longer they have to wait.
Yeah, overall abortion is super safe, you know, regardless. It's definitely much more safe than, you know, full-term pregnancies, but it just makes it more complicated as far as, especially for them, traveling and childcare and time off from work if they have to be here longer.
And do you have any idea in terms of who is able to travel those distances, or can you give us an idea of that? It takes some support services, if you need childcare, if you need funds to travel, do you help people with that?
Yeah, we definitely refer a lot of those women to the National Abortion Federation, or NAF. They have care coordinators that have been very helpful since, you know, the changes in Texas as far as helping with, you know, finding different funds for travel and childcare and all of those things, hotel services. And then there's some local organizations that we reach out to as far as like rides to the clinic or rides from the airport. I think we're all very concerned about the women who aren't able to figure those things out, or they find out later in pregnancy and now it's no longer an option for them to be able to, you know, wait 3 weeks to get a procedure.
And I know this varies widely, but what are some of the reasons that people give you for coming to get abortions here?
I think the biggest reason is the children that they already have, right? The thought that they want to be the best parent they possibly can to kids they have currently, and that they don't have the, you know, financial or emotional support to, you know, have more children.
And up to what time in pregnancy can your clinic perform abortions?
We go up to 24 weeks.
Okay. And we have at least two new providers planning to move here, as I mentioned. And you told the Texas Tribune that some providers in New Mexico are a bit worried that this might bring a lot of attention to the state. Why does that worry you?
Yeah, I think it's hard, right? Because we're super excited to have help. We don't want women to have to wait 2 or 3 weeks. And so I think more providers, in theory, sounds amazing. I think we're concerned, right? Because then the national attention is all shifting to these states that, you know, many, many fewer states that can offer the procedures. And we don't want the community or, you know, different people to have a kind of a backlash against that idea of New Mexico becoming kind of a hub of abortion care.
I know that security issues are sensitive, so I want to be careful how I ask that, but what kinds of steps have you taken, and do you feel like you're going to have to take more now to protect the people coming to your clinic, the people working there?
Yeah, I think we've definitely just increased the security presence that was already there, and then we're looking at like other things that UNM has done as far as things like potential metal detectors, more cameras on site. I haven't made any like distinct decisions yet, but I think we're just kind of seeing what other people are doing across the country and then going from there.
I know you have a busy schedule, so I appreciate you making time to talk to us this morning. But before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to say, Dr. Trueheart?
No, I mean, I think just the same thing they were kind of saying, you know, on the national level, that abortion is healthcare, that I just see this as doing my job.
Do you feel like you'll be able to continue training people in this procedure, given the load of patients now you'll be getting at your clinic? Because I know that was part of the mission of the clinic within UNM, is to continue training providers.
Yeah, and I think we're trying to figure out ways to also increase the people we are able to train to potentially get residents, you know, medical residents or OB-GYN residents from other states even, because that's our other concern, right, that lots of these other states are not able to train at all. Mm. So those doctors are going to be graduating having no exposure at all to abortion care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Dr. Trueheart, again, thank you so much for talking with us. And as I said, we know you have a busy schedule this morning. Thanks for being on Let's Talk New Mexico.
Thank you so much.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I want to take a caller right now, Janelle from Santa Fe. What did you want to say, or what question did you have?
I just was calling in. I was on my way to work. I heard, you know, the topic, et cetera, and I was letting somebody know that I'm actually housing somebody from Texas next week. It's a person that I do not know, but she's a friend of a friend, and she is about 28 years old. As the doctor said previously, she is a mother to a 9-year-old child, and she's just not in a position. You know, she started her own business recently. She is trying to be financially independent, and she was with my friend, and my friend, you know, mentioned to my friend, said, "You seem kind of out of sorts. What's going on?" She basically told her that she was pregnant and she had, was going to the state of Arkansas for an abortion. And this was, I think, 3 days prior to the decision. And, so anyway, my friend talked to her and said, "Well, you know what's going on." And this is what was concerning as a former educator is, the person told her she didn't know what was happening. Yeah, that this was being overturned and that in the state of Texas it was illegal. And so my friend talked to her and, you know, they're not very close friends, but she told her, you know, "I know where we can go. We have a safe place to stay." So, I mean, it's already hit home. I'm housing these people next week and I feel that I'm doing a service. You know, I talked to another female friend of mine and she said, "Wow, it's like we're almost running an underground railroad," she said, because she's in the same position. She just recently moved back to New Mexico from Georgia. And she is going to be doing the same thing, housing some people in her home who she just kind of knows indirectly, but they're coming to New Mexico for services. And again, you know, I think I want to help empower other women and I want to help however I can. I just hope that we get that whole 20 something, you know, we keep hearing that they're, you know, going to save our democracy, et cetera. I'm concerned about that because this young woman in particular, she didn't even know what was going on national with policy or even, you know, statewide policy. So, you know, it's hit close to home. I feel like I've been numb for the past couple weeks, and now it's all starting, and I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. And having friends throughout the South, I think that I may be kind of a go-to person because they know that I've got room. They know that I'm willing to help other people, and I just feel as a female that it's something that I need to do.
Okay. Janelle, thank you so much for calling in this morning. We appreciate it. I'm also joined this morning by Adrienne Monsonaris. She's CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. It has 23 health centers in Colorado, New Mexico, Southern Nevada, Wyoming, providing a full array of reproductive health services. Adrienne, Planned Parenthood has clinics in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Farmington. What services do your clinics provide?
As you mentioned, the full range of reproductive and sexual health care. So the majority of that is birth control, family planning visits, talking with folks about pregnancy options. We also provide sexually transmitted infection tests, treatment, breast cancer screening, cervical cancer screening. And right now I'm talking a lot about the abortion care that we proudly provide.
We just heard from a caller, Janelle in Santa Fe, talking about how she'll be housing a young woman from Texas who needs to come here for an abortion. Could you talk a little bit about the extra trauma added to women who are often faced with a terrible choice over reproduction and they have to travel for services and figure this all out?
I just was so, my heart just warmed to hear Janelle's story and the fact that she knows another person who's also opening up their home, because it does make a very big difference when patients arrive to our health center having had some kind of support. So it may be some of the financial support that Dr. Trueheart was talking about. It may be that they were able to get a ride from the airport or there was a welcoming environment for them, even in the hotel room. Whatever that level of support has occurred for a patient, we can tell the difference when they enter the health center. And sadly, many, many patients who are driving hundreds, if not thousands of miles at this point, when they're alone, they look alone. They are full of shame. There's a sense of stigma. One patient last week told me she felt terrorized because she didn't know what she was doing was legal and if she was going to have to go to jail. And as Dr. Trueheart mentioned, the majority of our patients seeking abortion care are already parents. So they may be traveling with their kiddos or worried about their child care options back home. So just to, you know, we don't discriminate against what zip code people are coming from, but we can tell when they've been coming from a state where they have had to escape these horrific laws.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. What are your thoughts on abortion in New Mexico now that Roe has been overturned? Give us a call at 505-277-5866. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support comes from Jen Wilson Home Team of RE/MAX Select, serving New Mexico as a realtor for 27 years. Jen is committed to community development through support of women's higher education. Info for prospective homebuyers and sellers at nmhouse.com.
Co-ops are a way for Native entrepreneurs to combine their collective strength and share resources, wisdom, and costs. From farming to renewable energy, Native business owners are working together on a developing business model with deep roots. We'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about what the overturn of Roe v. Wade means in New Mexico. What questions do you have? You can call us at 505-277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. I wanted to pick up my conversation with Adrienne Monsonaris. She's CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. Adrienne, what have you seen at your clinics since restrictions went into place last year in Texas, then following Oklahoma, and now with the overturn of Roe v. Wade?
We definitely have seen an influx of people traveling very long distances to get this care. We've also seen our own neighbors and community members really rise up in support and create welcoming, compassionate environments. We've got a lot of financial support, which is wonderful because we don't turn patients away if they're not able to pay. So that's been really wonderful. And we've also seen longer wait times. So for someone who may be coming in for their annual wellness exam or a birth control prescription, we'd love to get them in the same day or within a couple days. And sometimes we're having to ask patients to wait a couple weeks to be able to get in.
I wanted to take a call from Glenn from Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Megan, for having this topic. I worked for a Colorado senator in D.C. 55 years ago, and I will never forget a coworker confiding in me that she had to go to Mexico and get a back-alley abortion. She almost died, she reported to me, and I think it's so horrible that our six people in the Supreme Court have acted as they have to get rid of Roe. I've been married to two women who've had abortions, a daughter who's had an abortion, and I want to just thank New Mexico for being open for women's health care. It's a plus, and I just grieve that those other 26 or whatever the number is states, GOP states, are closing their doors to women in health care. Thank you
for calling, Glenn. We appreciate it. Adrienne, Glenn brings up an interesting point that what was before Roe was very dangerous, illegal abortions often. Medication abortions now account for over half of the abortions in the U.S. What is the availability of that medication like now? There were reports it has become more difficult to obtain as people stockpiled it in anticipation of the overturn of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, the abortion pills are definitely accessible still. The best way to do it, of course, is to go to a clinician, whether that's via telehealth or in a health center, just to make sure that it's clinically appropriate and to get the right clinical advice on how to use the medication. So in the states where it's legal, like New Mexico or Colorado and others, we are still able to provide that care. And what I do worry about is that in states where it is now banned and illegal, that people will work around the system to find ways to have access to that medication. And like in Glenn's story, you know, when women don't want to be pregnant, they will find ways to terminate those pregnancies. And it's always best if they're able to do that with a clinical partner and to be able to get the right method for them. And so what we are starting to see are patients from other states where abortion care is illegal, either getting on the internet or getting them through a friend or trying to find other ways to access the meds. In a clinical environment, they're incredibly safe. But I was just talking to a patient who told me a story of her cousin not knowing how many pills to take. So she had taken like 5, and that just devastated me. I said, have her call us right away, because, you know, the first pill, you only need one. And so if you don't know what the, you know, we're not trained physicians. I'm not a physician. People need to talk to their providers about that. So while there are still ability to access these pills, I worry about the safety issues surrounding the use of them. And then, as we've mentioned, the criminalization of supporting abortion care in a lot of states may land someone in a lawsuit of all things.
Mm. Who do you anticipate will be most affected by the overturning of Roe v. Wade in our region?
Well, Megan, we know this for a fact. We've had some early data coming from Texas, Oklahoma, Idaho, and other states that have banned this care. Black folks, indigenous folks, people of color, women living in very rural areas, and low-income women are disproportionately impacted by these bans. And it's cool. I mean, we know that to be true. And I think the lawmakers behind these judgments have also known that to be true. The data is there.
I do have an email from Stefan I'd like you to respond to. He says abortion is not health care. It's the result of the abrogation of personal responsibility and bad choices. Abortion should never take the place of contraception. Neither should it become a profit center or in our state, like the marijuana industry. Adrian,
that caller was? What was the name of the caller?
His name is Stefan Helgeson.
Stefan, okay, because I just want to just talk to you directly. An email.
Yeah,
I have heard that, and I do appreciate him being a part of the conversation and bringing in that point. There's a couple things. One is that every provider in abortion care will tell you the story every day of someone whose birth control method failed, and that's a reality. It is not 100%, regardless of the birth control method used, it fails. So there's that. I think people are absolutely taking a huge amount of responsibility in wanting to prevent pregnancies, and sometimes it doesn't work. That's a reality. The second thing I would say is that when I have worked with our patients and I'm holding someone's hand or they're telling me their stories, they are the most responsible people that I've ever known. They are already parents. They're trying to get through school. They are opening up a new business. They want to get a jump in their career. They're family members, they're contributing to the livelihood and the economic security of their own families. I just think it's really, frankly, and I mean this with such grace because I don't know this caller, but I do think it is a very cruel thing to pass judgment on someone when you don't know what they've been through and in their own shoes. These are the most responsible folks I've ever met.
We have a call from Cal in Santa Fe who has a question about Planned Parenthood, I think.
Yes. Question, is there a way to donate to Planned Parenthood of New Mexico to...
Are you there, Cal?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, sorry, you blipped out for a minute. You wanted to find out how to reach Planned Parenthood in New Mexico and support them?
Basically, to support the costs of a woman having to come to New Mexico for an abortion. Is there a way to...
Okay. Adrian, are you, we have to be a little cautious. I can't put out, you know, ask people to support things financially or otherwise on air, but are you helping people with costs of coming to New Mexico for abortion?
Yeah.
Is that information on your website?
Tell you.
Okay. We have your link at KUNM.org. So go ahead.
Of course. And I think all of these various providers will tell you the amount of dollars that we have received have increased, as has the need. So just to put it in perspective, last year we provided about $1 million in support for uninsured low-income patients who couldn't otherwise pay. This year that number has gone up to $6 million of support. And this is one of the things that keep me awake every night, that we will have to start turning patients away because we don't have the level of philanthropy that's needed to take on this public health crisis. And I think all providers in the state of New Mexico would say the same thing, that abortion funds and other charitable vehicles that are helping patients are in a big need right now. Because again, you know, now we're taking on the financial support for patients across the country. I think it's a really important point that Cal brings up that I don't know we thought of or that many people thought of as one of the implications of the Supreme Court ruling is that, again, public health that was spread across the country is now being centralized, as is that financial support that's necessary.
I know you have to go, Adrienne, but just before you leave, can you tell us, does Planned Parenthood have plans to expand services in New Mexico to meet demand? And there are some concerns about people coming from outside the state accessing care that's already at a premium here in New Mexico. Will you prioritize getting care to New Mexicans first at your clinics? And those are two different questions, but I wanted to get those in before
leave.
Yeah,
of course. number one, we right now have not in any way prioritized care because, again, we serve anyone who's able to get through whatever burden and barriers that they're already trying to face for our care. So that's number one. Number two, we are looking at expansion, but we do so very deliberately and thoughtfully with our on-the-ground partners. There is a huge coalition of reproductive justice, reproductive rights, and reproductive health care partners that have been working for decades, I mean generations, in New Mexico. And so we're very, very thoughtful about those expansion plans. And when we expand, we don't just expand abortion care. We look to expand all forms of reproductive and sexual health care. As I mentioned earlier in the call, you know, the majority of our work is making sure that people have access to birth control. That's really important. And so we want to make sure that we are able to provide, including transgender hormonal therapy, whatever the things, you know, whatever reproductive and sexual health care needs in our community, we want to do that in close partnership. So we're in New Mexico. We've been here, I think the first health center was opened in the late 50s. We're here to stay for hundreds of years. And so that takes a real strategic, thoughtful, partnership-driven approach that we've adopted at Planned Parenthood. For the other providers who are coming and wanting to serve patients, particularly just around abortion care, I'm just so in line with Dr. Trueheart's point. I'm kind of like so thankful and relieved that there'll be some support and someone to help offset some of this demand and burden. On one hand, but on the other hand, I know that to be successful, folks coming into the community really do need to be in partnership with and really invest in the health of New Mexico.
And just real quickly, Adrienne, Stefan did ask that he had raised the issue of New Mexico becoming a profit center for providers like you. Can you address that?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm glad to. I have, and I'd love another point to draw back to Glenn's story as well. But just to say, we don't make a profit. We are a nonprofit organization. And I joke with my board, how much money would you like me to lose today? It is not a profit-driven endeavor to provide the kinds of compassionate, non-judgmental care that we do. This is a very serious, wonderful, compassionate, non-judgmental space in a Planned Parenthood with excellent, talented providers who are absolutely not making money. That's not what we do, and it's not what we've ever done. But that's one piece. And my second piece is that I think Glenn's call was so important today because he told the story of his abortion stories, and he told it through this lens of knowing women whose lives had been changed. It sounds like his life had also been changed. And I think the more that we're able to do that, we all have stories of people in our families or ourselves whose lives have been benefited by abortion care. We just don't talk about it. And that silence creates even more shame and more stigma and allows misinformation, I think, to be perpetuated. And so I just would invite everyone who feels comfortable just mentioning it or talk about this story, whether you disagree with me or agree with me, talking about it with family members, with friends, with neighbors, I think is what's really important.
Okay, thank you so much, Adrienne Manzanares, CEO of Planned Parenthood out of the Rocky Mountains. I know you stayed a little longer than you meant to. We appreciate you sticking with us. Thanks for being with us this morning.
You bet, Megan, of course. Anytime. Take good care.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I am Megan Kamrick. I'm going to take a call from Albuquerque. Anne, you wanted to say something this morning here on Let's Talk?
I need to share my story. Thank you so much for airing this because it's critical. And I'm going to tell you straight away, if 42 years ago I hadn't had an abortion, I probably wouldn't be talking to you now. And what amazes me is, you know, I tried being understanding, and I was a Roman Catholic, and I would sit in the pews and listen to these constant pro-life, anti-abortion homilies, one after another after another. And finally, I just felt like such a pariah. It's like, you know what? I need to talk to my friends in these circles and let them know what happened to me. And what amazes me is the lack of empathy that I received from what I thought were my closest friends. No reassurance, no return call, just silence and blank stares. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you have known me for 12 years and this is the best you can do? What's missing in this conversation is compassion for women. And I will never call it a pro-life movement, what has happened with Roe v. Wade and what has been building since 1970. I call it an anti-abortion movement. You know, and the way that I put it in an email that I just sent off was, in order for us to call it a pro-life movement, you would have to care about women. You would have to tell men to stop raping us. Forgive me, but that's what happened with me. And you would also have to be determined to care for each and every one of those unintended pregnancies, every one of those children coming into the world. And I see, you know, strike three, you're out. So I left. I left the church. My final comment is, if we can help women in need, and I hope it's not as desperate as my situation was. I mean, I could have had a massive heart attack. It was that bad. If we can help them, then we must. You know, in my large, overarching worldview, that's being pro-life. And that's my comment.
I really appreciate it. This is such a hard topic, and I really appreciate you sharing your story with us today and being so open about it.
Thank you.
I wanted to go to my next guest, Corinne Sanchez. She's executive director of Tewa Women United. It's a multicultural and multiracial organization founded and led by Native women. Corinne, thank you for joining us. There are specific challenges facing Indigenous women in accessing reproductive health care, including abortion in New Mexico, even though it's legal here. Could you just say something briefly about that?
Good morning, Megan. Thank you for having me. Yes, I want to say that as Native and Indigenous women here in New Mexico, our primary care provider is the Indian Health Services. And we know across the country, advocates and leaders have always raised the issue that Indian Health Services is way underfunded for general basic health care. And when we're talking about the needs and special needs of women and birthing peoples, that is also the issue. We have lack of access to care, general health care, that is in regards to our bodies and our reproductive health. And we know that also with the Hyde Amendment that is in place, that abortion care is not covered, right, for those that are receiving Medicaid, Medicare, are on that public health system.
And what are your concerns about both the influx of out-of-state patients and also new providers entering the state?
Again, as the earlier speaker shared, you know, really having conversations and meeting with the communities that where people are coming into to provide. You know, we worked hard to pass this ban on abortion along with other sister organizations here in New Mexico. And we know that the majority of New Mexicans support abortion care and access. And, you know, as, you know, a state that has limited resources on all levels, one of the poorest states in the country, right, you know, we need to really think about the compassion and care and support that is needed in order to absorb this influx, ensure that those in our communities that are disproportionately impacted also are able to receive the care that they need in this moment in time. And again, that's around having conversations with organizations and providers here in New Mexico to be conscious of what that influx means and how we can all support those that are seeking care because it is banned in other spaces and places.
I wanted to jump for a minute to State Senator Linda Lopez, because I realized time is skittering by and we only have you for a few moments, Senator Lopez. So I apologize for not getting to you earlier. But to Corinne's point, do you think there will be efforts in the upcoming legislative session in January to bolster some of the services, healthcare services, as New Mexico takes on providing more services to people from other states? And I will say the senator was instrumental in overturning the dormant ban on abortion that was on our books here in New Mexico.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me on your show this morning. New Mexico's legislature, we don't have any specifics at this point in time as to what may be introduced, but we know that we are meeting with our sisters organizations here in the state to see what may be beneficial for not just New Mexico residents, but also for those who are coming in from other places across our country that need this important service.
You have said there needs to be an additional abortion protections in state law, in addition to the repeal of this ban. Why so? What sorts of protections do you have in mind?
Well, part of the consideration, and of course, you know, with the governor's executive order that she did issue last week, of course, it's very important to do so, as other states have, you know, with Democratic governors, have moved forward with similar types of executive orders. It's consideration, of course, to make sure that those who are providing services here in our state are protected. You know, so there's still those who are receiving services also, and those who are coming across state lines. And I think the governor's executive order is a first step, but that's part of what we are researching at this point in time to make sure that we are doing the best that we can to protect those persons who need to access abortion care.
Just before I let you go, Senator Lopez, as we discussed before the show, you are Catholic. You're part of a group called Catholics for Choice. Some may be surprised to know there's a range of opinion among people of faith, such as yourself. Why do you see this as part of your effort to get more support for families in New Mexico?
Well, you know, Catholics for Choice, it's an organization that's been around for a long time, and I've been a member for a long time also. We're looking, as the conversation has been, around compassion and care for services that are provided, you know, to persons who need it. And, you know, those of us who, and it's been mentioned, you know, who are persons of faith, we still also believe that we support everyone who needs the access, and it's compassionate service. For those who need this, you know, who make this difficult choice in their lives that they have to make. And it's not just, you know, for those who have means, because abortion has always been around. It will never go away. It's something that has been part of for a long, long time. What Roe versus Wade had done, of course, is provide access for those who are, as you had mentioned previously on the show, for women who do not have means, right, for low-income people of color, to have access to safe services. Women who have means, who have privilege, have always had access. So it's not a matter of you're going to get rid of this, but it's making sure that we are providing access to everyone.
Well, Senator Lopez, I know you have to go. Thank you for joining us ever so briefly this morning. And we'll stay in touch with you to see what is going to come up in the legislative session. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about what the overturn of Roe v. Wade means in New Mexico. What questions do you have? There's still time to give us a call at 505-277-5866. We'll be right back.
Just imagine the programs and services you can help grow this spring when you donate your vehicle to KUNM. We accept cars, trucks, boats, RVs, and more. It's easy to give, and the pickup is free. Our vehicle donation support team is available 7 days a week, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Call 888-KUNM-CAR to schedule your vehicle donation today. That's 888-586-6227.
This Week in This American Life, Daryl Lennox is a stand-up comedian. He's black.
That was one of my secret weapons, to be a big brother, and people get nervous. Oh, it's a big black guy. Watch out. That shit is powerful. It was a thrill, you know?
And then he went blind. And how people treated him changed so much. What happened this week?
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're talking about what's next in New Mexico now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned. And I have on the phone State Representative Michaela Lara Cadena. Good morning, Michaela.
Hi, good morning, Megan, and thank you for having me.
What did you want to say this morning?
Sure. I just very quickly wanted to lift up the important work that abortion funds have been doing over decades and talk for a second about self-managed abortion and what that looks like today. And then name some of the risks of criminalization that people are facing and expand on the conversation started by your incredible guest today. But first, of course, like so many have known, Roe was never enough. And because of that, abortion funds across the country, including three powerhouses in New Mexico, Indigenous Women Rising, the New Mexico Repro Coalition for Repro Choice, and the Mariposa Fund, have been meeting the gaps. So abortion funds have raised resources to pay directly for people's abortions and to pay for the practical support they need to get closer to the abortions they want and need, from raising dollars to buy travel resources like airplane and bus tickets to stipends for childcare. Abortion funds have filled these gaps, and more so in this horrendous moment will continue to do so. So just wanted to give a shout out to those orgs that have been doing the work for decades, because Roe was never enough. And because these organizations are the foundation and cornerstone of the networks that people will be needing as they move across state lines closer to the care that they deserve. So sometimes I get a little worried about recreating what people call, and of course with some problematic annotations, things like underground networks. Like, there's folks on the ground that know how to do this, and they certainly need our investment and our dollars to lift up and expand this important work.
Well, Representative Cadena, you helped me out, because I have the executive director of the New Mexico Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice here sitting across from me, Joan Lemunyan Sanford. Joan, your organization, as Michaela said, helps support people traveling from other states to seek abortion with transportation and funds. Is there a common factor among the people you help, their socioeconomic status, anything else?
Well, I think it's exactly what several of your guests have already mentioned, that people with disposable incomes and a credit card will always have access to abortion care. And because of the racist structure of our capitalist system, the limits on abortion, the barriers on abortion, fall hardest on people of color, rural people, youth, and, you know, people with limited incomes.
I also have in the studio Nadia Cabrera-Mazzeo. She's a staff attorney with ACLU New Mexico. Nadia, I think there's a lot that we just don't know yet in terms of what you all will be dealing with. But are there legal implications for people coming here from other states where it's banned to seek abortions? And are there legal implications for groups like Jones that help them? Do we know that?
Well, I think the most honest answer is that we don't know exactly how a lot of these situations are going to play out until they are tested in the courts. Laws have been weaponized against people for many, many times in the last few decades alone. There have been over 1,000 instances of women being investigated, prosecuted, and even imprisoned for pregnancy outcomes that weren't live births. And this is a very strange time, because a lot of these other states are trying to regulate conduct outside of their own borders, which normally is an obvious unconstitutional move. But the final judicial review for these kinds of laws is at the Supreme Court of the United States, and we don't really know what to expect. So that's the kind of unknown landscape that we're facing.
And the governor signed an executive order. One thing it does is direct state-level departments to not cooperate with investigations by other states into abortion care. Do we know how much legal heft that has?
I think that has significant legal heft in terms of what New Mexico has control over, which is the act of not declining to aid in these investigations. But there are still a lot of unknowns with how law enforcement are going to try to enforce these laws. And even so, those protections are not enough to protect people from just being investigated and arrested, because when law enforcement have and see that a person has an arrest warrant out for them, even if it's from another state, they don't know the facts underlying that charge. So they don't know that it's abortion related, and they just see, oh, homicide or something similar to that, which is very serious, mm-hmm. and they will arrest that person following their duty, and then the facts will come out later. So it's a scary
time. I hadn't
even
considered that. Okay. The ACLU is active in our legislative system. Do you plan to pursue additional protections or laws in New Mexico around this issue, around security issues? And what lawmakers do you see as allies in that?
Well, two of our biggest allies in the legislature are on this call today. Thank you very much. And otherwise, our main priority is to hold the line and ensure that anti-abortion legislation does not make its way to the governor's desk. And we also need to remember that providers and patients are already subject to harassment and stalking and similar violence like that. So we need to strengthen privacy protections and the protections to protect the physical safety of patients and providers at clinics and at their homes.
Joan, I want to turn back to you. Your coalition is made up of a variety of faith traditions, and the core values of your group include ensuring access to sex education and that people who want to be parents have the right and opportunity to do so, and that all families should have the resources to care for their children with dignity. Could you talk about this larger context of your support for abortion?
Well, as people of faith, we trust that when people are considering becoming parents, that they do that thoughtfully and prayerfully, according to however they recognize the divine presence in their life. And so it's our duty then to support those decisions. And we support that, whether it's abortion, whether that's creating an adoption plan, or whether that is to parent. And if people choose to parent, they need to have all the supports that they need to make sure that their families thrive and not just survive.
Our last guest, as we're nearing the end of the show, is the Most Reverend John C. Wester. He's Archbishop for the Santa Fe Archdiocese. Thank you for joining us on your vacation, Archbishop.
Oh, you're welcome, Megan. I'm happy to do it.
You issued a long statement after the decision overturning Roe v. Wade, which we have linked to at KUNM.org. You welcomed the ruling, but you also called for more housing assistance, prenatal and postpartum care, medical care, paid family leave, and protection from domestic violence. But it strikes me that opposing abortion and creating a bigger social safety net tends to be separated into two different political parties in our country. So how do you see this as a moment to possibly change that paradigm?
Well, I think you're right. The paradigm does need to be changed. And for us, as you know, we feel that the baby in the womb is a human life. And so I certainly am feeling a lot of compassion for the women and your guests so far. I see their point. But for us, it's a baby. So that becomes a difficulty. But you're right. The other things, we make abortion easy, but we don't make having the baby come to term easy. And so those things you mentioned, housing assistance, prenatal and postpartum care, medical care for families, home visiting, secure access to universal pre-K, SNAP benefits, these are all things that are helpful. And frankly, I think a lot of the drivers for abortion are poverty, not all, but many of them. And so I think if we can help people in this regard, it would help people to bring their babies to term.
There are many people who feel differently about abortion access, including Senator Lopez we had on earlier, Joan, who's here with the coalition, the New Mexico Coalition for Reproductive Choice, Religious Coalition. Sorry, I didn't get the name right. who had said, you know, whatever decision, I can't remember if you said it now or when we talked earlier, whatever decision someone has reached according to their faith and values, it would be wrong for us to assume that we know better and our duties to support that. Why do you feel differently?
Well, I think that a person has a person's conscience is very important. And if a person's come to a well-formed conscience, has come to a decision, you know, that talks about whether something's a sin or not. But there's also the objective order. So I think that, ethically, for us in the Catholic Church, this is a human life. So objectively, that would be a sin but it'd be wrong to take that human life. So I think that's what you speak to a good point there, Megan. I think what we need to do is change hearts and not just minds. We need to engage the conversation with people and help them to see, you know, that this is a life and that what can they do to promote that life and how can we support people to do that. So people do come up with different decisions, you're right. And so that's our work, is to just help people form their consciences properly.
Do you see an expansion of what the Archdiocese is doing to support women in this state who might be in crisis and to make the best decision for them?
Yeah, we do. The Archdiocese does a lot. And things, you know, for example, CHI St. Joseph's, you know, they visit about 600 families a week and prenatal and postnatal care. And so they really help people to bring the baby to term, to support the people. And I think our parishes do that. We do. We have a lot, lots and lots of programs for people, to support people, to help them. And to be compassionate, you know, to the women, too. I think sometimes, women are in a tough position in making these decisions. And the men seem, at least from my point of view, they don't seem to be part of that. They just walk away in many cases, not always. So I think that women need to be supported. We need to be compassionate toward women and recognize that they're making very difficult decisions, and to certainly not to criminalize the women in any way.
I want to let Joan respond to that. Do you see common ground here, Joan, or what would you like to say?
Well, yes, of course. There's lots of common ground here. But what we can't have is any particular faith or belief codified into law. These are personal, private decisions that people make according to their faith and values. And the legislature has no place in there to make those decisions for any of us.
We are nearing the end of the show. Corinne, I feel I did not give you enough time. I have so many guests this morning. But before we go, you have said the goal of TEWA Women United is collective liberation. What does that mean in the context of everything we've talked about this morning?
I think when you reflect on the history of this country and the religious impositions, the genocidal practices and strategies, there are laws that are on the books that dehumanize peoples, right? Not just women, indigenous women, LGBTQAI peoples, all of our rights, all of our existence. And so hearing the conversation is that particular piece, right? It cannot be having these laws codified that put forward a particular view. When we look at the Supreme Court and we look at the justices that are there that have been accused of rape and assault, when we look at this movement of boarding schools and the death of thousands and thousands of Native American children, and now to have this place of forced birth and forced pregnancies to be carried on, is the dynamic similar to sexual assault and domestic violence in that continuation? And we need to recognize this place where we dehumanize those that are on welfare. And as we're saying, if, you know, we're forcing these pregnancies and we're forcing these births, then we need to have a response that is also honoring the dignity and life of those individuals, which we don't have in this moment. I think there are places in our history where we're working towards that, and New Mexico has stepped up in so many beautiful and powerful ways, and we need to continue that. Okay. We need to look at the invisibility of people.
I'm so sorry, Corinne. I have to go. That's all the time we have today. Thanks to all who called in and our guests. Our engineer was Roman Garcia. Taylor Velasquez took your calls. Robert Maldonado live tweeted, and Kaveh Mova had produced. Join us next week. We'll talk about schools and gun violence. Find the show at KUNM.org.